This weekend starts right after this. Managing your 401k is hard. Bloom isn't. See what you could be doing to make your 401k better by getting a free analysis at bloom401k.com/deal. That's Bloom with three O's, 401k.com/deal.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
What is the perfect age? I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
Researchers are studying the point in life when we feel our best and why. Hear what the different generations are saying.
Why the U.S. Army is struggling to find new recruits.
Five facts about Vikings quarterback Case Keenum.
And the key piece of apparel if you want to dress up like Kylo Ren of Star Wars. Maternity pants.
In the scene, he's wearing pants that go above the navel. They're high-waisted. And that's just not in fashion in the real world. In the Star Wars universe, that apparently is the case. But here on Earth, if you go shopping for high-waisted pants for men, you're going to be hard-pressed to find them.
Wall Street Journal reporter Sarah Needleman on the trend of dressing up like Kylo Ren. She's here later in the hour. Are fat millennials indirectly hurting national security? A new study finds that the Army's problem of finding physically fit recruits at a time of rising obesity in the United States is especially problematic in the South, where it traditionally draws a high percentage of soldiers. More from USA Today military writer Jim Michaels. Jim, what's going on?
A couple things are going on. First, it's just a national problem. And of course, not just limited to the military, but you've got rising issues of obesity and other lack of fitness problems across the nation. It is prevalent among young people, among people who are military age, generally sort of 18 to 25 to 27. This particular study took a look at comparing regions of the country and found it particularly bad in southern states, mainly the Southeast and so forth. And these are states that the military has traditionally recruited from most strongly. Generally speaking, people from those states are more open to joining the military than other parts of the U.S., including the Northeast, the West Coast, Northwest, and so forth. So it's been a growing problem for the Army and for the military writ large. And this latest study shows it's particularly problematic in the South, which just presents another wrinkle, another challenge for the Army as it goes about trying to recruit young people into its ranks.
And part of the problem, as you point out, that obesity here and the lack of general fitness means more injuries during basic training, which can lead to guys leaving, which is expensive.
Right, exactly. I mean, so there's only, just over 20% of the young people that are even eligible for the military for a variety of reasons, including fitness, but other reasons as well. And so it's a problem just getting in, but it also becomes a problem if there's a lack of fitness in basic training, because injuries mean attrition, and attrition's expensive by the time you bring the person in, get them through early part of basic training and so forth, and then attrit them out. It's a very expensive process. It can cost tens of thousands of dollars per individual, and then you've got to recruit someone else. So it's a real problem. It's a national security problem as well as a health problem.
I think what's also disturbing here, and correct me if I'm wrong, but basic training today is not the same. Like it's more watered down than when you went through it, right, with the Marines.
Right. It has changed a lot, and they've, in fact, some years back instituted a bunch of changes in basic training to just accommodate the fact that you've got folks coming in who are less fit. So what they've tried to do in basic training is sort of accommodate that and bring you, you know, assume that you're coming in less fit and then get you more fit in basic training. But that's difficult to do. It's much better to have a person come in with a certain level of fitness and be able to improve on it. It's very difficult to take people in who are pretty badly out of shape and to get them up to shape. You know, they're also trying to encourage, you know, recruits even before they get to basic training to start getting in shape. But all that's difficult. And sort of interesting to me that, you know, that the Army's faced these issues before. Even in World War II, I think that they said only about 50% of the recruits were, or eligible people met the standards for the Army. But it's much worse now, and even more alarming, the trends are not going in the right direction. The trends are going in the wrong direction.
We're speaking with Jim Michaels, military writer at USA Today, about his piece entitled "Physically Fit Recruits for the Army Are Hard to Find." And specifically, this problem is in the Southeast, where the U.S. Army generally gets many of its recruits from. What about a solution here?
Well, you know, it's interesting because a lot of the folks who, the researchers who did this study, and others have said this too, this shouldn't be an Army problem. The Army can't do anything. Again, it comes back to you can't take a totally out of shape person and then, you know, quickly get them in shape and put them out into the operational forces. It's a societal issue and a cultural issue that the Army is paying the price for it because, you know, people when these young people are less fit. It does become an Army problem, but it's not one that the Army certainly alone can solve. So what these researchers talk about doing is a lot of the things that are going on now and have gone on in the past. You think back to Kennedy's Council on Physical Fitness efforts to bring the issue to the fore, dietary emphasis in schools, physical education, which in previous generations, which was part of schooling, generally speaking, is not part of school anymore.
All right, thanks, Jim. USA Today military writer Jim Michaels. 13 minutes now after the hour on this weekend. Let's do some self-reflection for just a moment here. Are your best years ahead of you or behind you? The ideal age is a question that Jay Olshansky thinks about often. Dr. Olshansky, an epidemiologist and professor at the UIC School of Public Health in Chicago, is researching ways to slow down the process of aging by studying things like the genetics of long-lived individuals. More from Wall Street Journal columnist Claire Ansberry. Claire, is he trying to see if reversing the aging process is possible?
Well, I don't think he's going to be able to reverse the aging process, but he wants to slow it. And basically, they're doing things like studying the genes of long-lived individuals to see what's there. So it's more of a thing of his idea would be to take 60 years to become a 30-year-old. So basically looking for ways to slow the aging process by studying those who are long-lived, studying things like, you know, just different sort of research where it's been shown that people, that the aging process has been slowed. He's not looking at things like, he and his teams aren't looking at things like exercise or diet or anything like that. They're really looking at sort of the biology of people who have lived long and seeing if there's something there that can be to use and to help the entire population.
And what were some of his biggest findings so far?
Well, you know, they're really, one of the interesting things and one of the interesting questions he's asking is, you know, if we had a pill that could stop aging in its tracks, you know, when would we give that pill? What is the perfect age? I mean, he's talking about biological aging. You know, if we were at that point, you know, when is the perfect age? When would we be looking for that? And when would we administer it? And, you know, a lot of people make that distinction, and it's all true and fair that, you know, physically, we may peak physically in our 20s and 30s, but you know, if you stop then you don't get sort of the wisdom that comes in later life. You know, some people think the 20s and 30s, while physically a peak, you know, are times of a lot of confusion and a lot of, you know, soul searching. And one guy said, look, I'm 63. I'd love to have my 30-year-old body, but at that point in my life, I hadn't fallen in love yet, hadn't had my kids. So, you know, the 30s aren't perfect. So it really does depend on when you're looking at well-being and life satisfaction. You know, a lot of studies have shown that people in their mid-50s and 50s up to 70s, that's when a lot of the satisfaction and well-being, you know, peaks, because you're still in good shape physically, and you're much more secure. Well, a lot of people are more secure financially. You know, they've raised their kids. They're enjoying having grandkids. And they have more time to enjoy things.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal columnist Claire Ansberry. And while they weren't able to hammer down a perfect age, they were able to drill down on milestones.
Right, right. And that, you know, and there's, look, none of these, when somebody comes up with an age, it's not accepted worldwide as this is the perfect age by everybody. I mean, there's going to be a lot of studies that say, okay, well, you say it's 28 to 32, but, you know, my studies show it's 34 or something like that. But when you're looking at one researcher on the perfect age, he studied divorce rates and found that, you know, from the ages of about 28 to 32, the divorce rates declined for something like 11% a year after the age 28, or between the ages of 28 and 32, because people were a little bit more established. But after the age of 32, the divorce rates started picking up. And, you know, whether that's because people get a little bit more settled in their ways or what, you know, that's all speculation. He was doing more of a quantitative study and really looking at divorce rates. So that's a way that it's not so subjective, that researchers can, you know, pinpoint things a little bit more definitely. And you could do it, I mean, with, you know, having a child, you know, you can look at a lot of different things. Fertility rates, you know, fertility starts to decline at the age of 32 and rapidly so after 37. So if people want to think about having families, you know, it's best to start before the age of 32.
You imagine, though, the whole idea of just freezing your age in time and holding there? Wall Street Journal columnist Claire Ansberry, 22 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Thanks for being with us. For some people, the new year means driving resolutions. The GM Buy Power credit card from Capital One surveyed some drivers about their plans on the automotive front for 2018. We're joined now by Chris Duke, host and executive producer of Motors TV, the auto improvement show. Chris, give us some findings.
The buying results showed that nearly one-third said that they should purchase a new vehicle this year, while 15% will purchase or lease a new car in 2018. Now, for those gearing up for a new vehicle purchase, nearly one-third of those agree that they need to start saving in 2018. In fact, nearly one-quarter of those are already saving toward the purchase or lease of a new vehicle.
Broadly speaking here, the numbers that you cited, the 33% indicating they should get a new vehicle, and 15% of others say they will. Put those numbers in perspective. Are those huge numbers? Are those standard numbers?
My gut tells me that that's a lot more than it has been in the past years, and the reason is because of all the trends, because of gas prices, and because of what's coming out of Detroit right now.
You know, what struck me also in looking at some of these notes was that the enthusiasm for SUVs, which we're hearing a lot about. And then the survey also says that a good number of people expect that more environmentally friendly vehicles will be more mainstream in 2018. So that doesn't seem to square. Like they want that SUV, which is not always considered the most environmentally friendly.
Right. Well, that is true. Actually, the two trends are intersecting, which is that automakers are making SUVs more environmentally friendly. Some electric EV side of that is coming out. And so the two roads are intersecting a little bit, so people are able to finally get a little bit of both of what they want. And to have an SUV that's getting, you know, like a diesel SUVs are coming out, too, which are getting like 30 miles per gallon.
It's remarkable. How about Ford and, Chevy and Jeep, like, bringing back some of the old iconic trucks?
Yeah, that's the 2019 Ford Ranger's coming out. That ended about 7 years ago. So that's a brand, that's a model that people have been expecting to come back and have wanted to come back as a mid-sized truck. Oddly enough, with that, the news is that it's not going to be coming out in a regular cab. It's only Super Cab and Super Cruise, so basically the four-door, the bigger version of that. Also coming out of the North American International Auto Show is the 2019 Ram 1500. That's a full-size half-ton truck. Again, you know, the automakers are putting a lot of effort into that. There's a lot of new things coming out from Chevy as well, with the Silverado 1500 and the Duramax diesel engine as part of that. BMW's got the X2 SUV, Mercedes-Benz with their G5500. So a lot of big vehicles coming out.
We're speaking with Chris Duke, host and executive producer of the auto improvement show called Motors TV. We're talking about trends for 2018. What does it say, by the way, about the automotive industry when some of these older trucks are being reintroduced? Does that show the appetite for SUVs or what?
Yeah, no, I think there's some nostalgia to some of the brands that are, some of these automakers that are bringing back older brands. But yeah, no, the trends from the automakers as well as the needs from consumers are all indicating trucks and SUVs. So that's exactly what's going on out there right now. The results of the survey are indicating that nearly 32% are choosing SUVs as their top vehicle and 15% trucks. So it's dominated by SUVs and trucks right now.
Thanks, Chris. Chris Duke, host and executive producer of Motors TV, the Auto Improvement Show. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. If you want the absolute best shirts around, you have to go to CT Shirts. I want you to try them, because once you do, you'll never go back to some random shirt off the shelf of a department store. And CT Shirts come in custom sizes, so you're not messing with ill-fitted sleeve lengths or neck sizes. It's time to step up your game and look your best, so I got you a special CT Shirts deal. 3 CT Shirts for $99. CT Shirts use the softest, most exquisite fabrics ever. Work or casual, tie or no tie, tuck or untucked, when you're wearing a CT shirt, you'll look your best. Here's the deal. 1 CT shirt normally costs $100, but right now you get 3 shirts for just $99. That's 60% off. Go to ctshirts.com/deal. And CT shirts come with free delivery, a 6-month quality guarantee, and free returns. If you hurry, $99 gets you 3 amazing CT shirts. ctshirts.com/deal. That's ctshirts.com/deal. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Coming up this half hour, companies race to gather a newly prized currency, and that is our body measurements. Also, how to dress like Kylo Ren of Star Wars. You'll need a certain piece of female clothing to do it. And 5 facts about Vikings quarterback Case Keenum that you probably didn't know. That story in about 20 minutes. Well, what if a state had 2 official flags? Mississippi, the last U.S. state with the Confederate battle emblem on its flag, is considering a compromise. 2 state flags, one with the emblem and one without. Here's This Weekend's Jennifer Koschenka.
Mississippi, the last state with a Confederate battle emblem still on its flag, is considering a compromise. 2 state flags, one with the emblem, one without. Cameron McWhorter of the Wall Street Journal has written about this issue and has more. Cameron, what would that new flag look like?
That's a subject, like a lot of, like everything else involving a Confederate flag, there's a great deal of debate. This one proposal is for it to look like what they are calling the Magnolia flag, which would basically be a blue star in the corner, and then you'd have a magnolia tree flowering in the center. And that's not, well, a lot of people don't like that flag, including people who oppose the Confederate flag, because that was a flag that was used by secessionists when they were pro-slavery secessionists when they were seceding at the beginning of the Civil War, just prior to the Civil War. So the flag is a tremendous constant debate in Mississippi, as it has been across the South. And this is one when the legislators attempt to try to fix that.
Yeah, when did this start? Who came up with this idea?
Representative Greg Snowden. He's the second most powerful leader in the Mississippi House, ardent conservative, ardent Republican, and also very proud of his ancestors who fought in the Civil War for the Confederacy. So, but he is trying to find a compromise for the simple reason that, for one, and one important reason is that he thinks the brand of the state of Mississippi, when you're trying to lure businesses and jobs down to that state, is hurt when you have the Confederate battle flag on your state flag.
We're speaking with Cameron McWhorter of the Wall Street Journal. Now, Cameron, your story mentions a possible statewide referendum, and it says again. How many times has this gone to a vote, and is it possible this will again?
Yeah, they had one in 2001. It was a very fierce debate, and it ended up with the current state flag winning widely. I think 65% of the voters chose the state flag. So many representatives and senators since then have said, well, we don't need another referendum because we had one, and the answer was pretty loud. That is constantly being challenged by opponents of the flag, particularly after what happened in Charleston in 2015, where a white nationalist killed 9 people who were African Americans in a church. And just prior to killing those people, he had displayed on the internet pictures of him with the Confederate flag. So that sort of roiled the South, including Mississippi. And there's just been this ongoing battle of whether to get rid of it or not.
Cameron, I don't know if you can answer this, but do you have any idea why Mississippi is the last holdout in this flag debate?
Mississippi is a conservative state, and they don't like change. And they are, and many of the supporters of the current flag will point out, this flag has been flying over the state over state building since 1894, which was before any other southern states had the Confederate emblem on their flags. So they're saying there's no reason. This is about heritage. This isn't about any sort of nod to segregation and slavery. And it was just honoring the veterans who had fought to protect their state. Opponents obviously see it very differently and see this as a clear legacy that of white supremacy and oppression.
And what do you think is next? What happens next in this battle? Do you know?
I think that this proposal by Representative Snowden is intriguing. I think at the very least, if it doesn't move through the legislature, at the very least, it has sparked further debate, and there are other flag proposals sort of in the works, including, as you mentioned, the referendum. So there's going to be something coming. We don't know exactly what, but something's coming on this front, I think, soon, if not this year, then next, regarding the state flag. And if there's another referendum, it's going to be a loud, noisy campaign.
This weekend's Jennifer Koschenko with Wall Street Journal reporter Cameron McWhorter, who's based in Atlanta. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend. Thanks for being with us. Time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. If you want to take your business to the top, take it to a top 10 state for business, Michigan. Contact michiganbusiness.org today. Clothing companies now see body measurements as one of their most prized currencies, and millions of Americans are increasingly offering up their innermost personal data in search of customized pieces or maybe a better fit. It's a story by Drew Harwell, who covers artificial intelligence and big data for The Washington Post. Drew, what's up here?
Companies like Stitch Fix are gathering lots of information that we may not have given any company 5 or 10 years ago, which is our body measurements, not just our waist and pant size and shirt size, but also really, really delicate, sort of precise information about, you know, how long our fingers are and if we were pregnant and all sorts of data that might look kind of like a health record that we might give at the hospital.
Wow. What for?
They're doing it because they figure, you know, if you give all your body measurements to a company like Stitch Fix, they know it. They can give you more personalized clothes. They can offer you maybe styles that fit better for you, that are more than just the few sizes fits all kind of regime of traditional retail. But it's locking you in. If you feel like one store is going to sell you clothes that really, really fit you well and the other is just going to sell you something off the rack. You might choose to go there and keep going there for a long time.
Wow. Is this some sort of privacy issue like medical information, the way that might be collected?
Yeah, I think so, because, you know, body measurements and stuff about our body, even more so than, you know, our fingerprints and our voices and our faces, that's really sort of something that's endemic to us. It's something that's been protected for a long time. I mean, there are regulations in the country, including HIPAA, that govern the use of and sharing of private sort of personal body data. It's stuff that, you know, if these companies were taking this data in a hospital, it would be regulated under something like HIPAA, which is the nation's, you know, sort of premier medical privacy law. But because they're taken in an app and they're taken in sort of a business environment, they're not regulated. So the question becomes, is this something we want to be, you know, pretty closely paying attention to? Are there privacy issues with having certain private sort of for-profit enterprises knowing a lot of personal information about us? And if so, what are we doing about it?
These companies tracking our movements, say, on Pinterest and Facebook, too, for additional data?
Yeah, exactly. And that's sort of the next step. And some of the companies talk about this, too. Indochino talks about this. They're a menswear. They sell sort of suits, but they get measurements when you go in. They're connecting your body measurements to the ads you've seen in the past, what money you've spent, if you've been in the store, because they can sort of track your location from your cell phone now. So they're tying it all in together.
How about that? You mentioned, too, Amazon buying this startup called Body Labs. They do these 3D body models. What's involved there?
Yeah, and Amazon is big on this, too. They don't have a thing like Stitch Fix where you go on and you create your profile by telling them all your measurements. But Amazon's way is different in that they're starting to sell kind of like the Amazon Echoes that are speaker microphone sets where you can talk to in your home. They're now selling these things called Echo Looks that are actually cameras that they say you can put in your bedroom, and you put on one outfit, you take a picture on the Amazon device, you put on another outfit, you take another picture, and the camera actually sort of gives you an opinion on what it thinks looks better.
Wow. Drew Harwell covers AI and big data for the Washington Post. 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend. Coming up next, why men would need to wear maternity pants. When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it tops for three straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in defense, cybersecurity, mobility, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan among the top 10 states in the country for business. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org. Small business never stops moving, so Dell's U.S.-based small business technology advisors are trained to keep up. Just call 877-BUY-DELL to get connected with an advisor who will get to know your business and tailor a solution with Dell PCs powered by Intel Core processors that is right for you, so you can focus on your business and leave the tech questions to Dell. Call 877-BUY-DELL to get in touch with a tech advisor today. So all over Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, you may have noticed this, people are taking up the Kylo Ren challenge. The goal isn't to show your moves with a lightsaber, but rather to parody a moment in Star Wars The Last Jedi when the villain appears without a shirt and in black slacks covering his midriff. Wall Street Journal reporter Sarah Needleman says few participants are as buff as the shirtless actor Adam Driver, but that isn't the biggest obstacle. It just isn't easy, apparently, to find high-waisted pants for men. Go figure. Sarah set this up.
Well, in the movie Star Wars The Last Jedi, there's a scene in which Kylo Ren, who's the villain, he appears dressed in these snug, high-waisted slacks and no shirt. And it's caused a lot of giggles among fans. It's a very serious scene, and it's just sort of like surprising to see him in this appearance, which is not typical of the Star Wars universe. And this trend has started on social media called the Kylo Ren Challenge, where people are dressing up to look like the character Kylo Ren in this particular scene.
Wow. And they're dressing up to look like Kylo Ren in like parties?
Well, the problem is that in the scene he's wearing pants that go above the navel. They're high waisted, and that's just not in fashion in the real world. In the Star Wars universe, that apparently is the case. But here on Earth, if you go shopping for high waisted pants for men, you're gonna be hard pressed to find them.
Okay.
Even for women too. They are a little bit more common for women. Yeah. Especially if you do look in the athletic wear category.
Yes.
But for the most part, they are very hard to find. They're just not popular. They used to be back in the, before the 50s, they were very popular, and men wore them often with suspenders. And they were in some of the 70s and 80s action films. Bruce Lee films where you would see him wearing high-waisted pants. But then you had Steve Urkel from Family Matters in the 90s sitcom really make them quite nerdy looking,
yeah.
And we haven't really seen them much ever since then.
Some of these guys are resorting to maternity pants to pull this off. Is that correct?
Right. Well, because it's so darn hard to find these high-waisted pants for men, guys are just trying to be creative. So they're looking for, one of the gentlemen I interviewed admitted to wearing maternity pants that he borrowed from his sister's girlfriend. Other guys are using material to create like a sash, a black sash that blends in with the black pants, so you can't quite tell that they're two pieces, but that's sort of like cheating. There's some guys who just took pants that were not meant to be high-waisted and hiked them up real high, but they admitted that it was quite painful, and they really couldn't handle it for more than a few seconds, but enough to snap a photo and post it to social media. Then they took them off.
Wow. When will this end, Sarah? Please tell us.
Probably when the next internet meme takes a hold and it's some sort of different fashion trend. Hard to say. Star Wars is pretty darn popular.
Wow. Thanks, Sarah. Wall Street Journal reporter Sarah Needleman. 6 minutes in front of the hour on This Weekend. Case Keenum, the former University of Houston standout, went undrafted after his college days and has bounced around the NFL since 2012. But look at him now. Quarterbacking the Vikings in the NFC Championship game Sunday against the Eagles.
Case on a deep drop, steps up in the pocket. He'll fire to the right side, caught by Diggs. Stay up!
Oh, my God!
Oh, my God!
At the 30!
No!
10!
Touchdown! Are you kidding me?
Miracle finish!
It's a Minneapolis miracle!
Heavy.com, by the way, is a list of things you probably didn't know about him. One, he married his high school sweetheart. Kimberly sparked headlines in 2016 when she and Case were heavily featured on Hard Knocks, chronicling the Rams' move from St. Louis to L.A. She used to quiz Case on the team's playbook. Number two, Case's father, Steve, was a college head coach at McMurray University and at Sol Ross State in Alpine, Texas. Three, his mother was a super jock in college, three-sport athlete at McMurray, once taught Case's wife, Kimberly, in fifth grade. Number four, Keenum credits family and faith for his success. And number five, although he has kept his Texas roots strong, he has his sights set on staying in Minnesota even after this season ends. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. As a business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.